This episode was recorded during NAIDOC Week on Yuin Country and edited on Dharawal Country. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of these lands and the elders past, present and emerging. Always was, always will be.
For some people, they really love touring, but I was really not. I don't love being on the road all the time, and I never really have, so I really appreciated the gift of having to stay put.
Yep.
And it'll create a lot of change moving forward. I'm not going to go back to, flying weekly and...
Forager.
Changing the way the world eats
by making ethical easy.
That sounds like a very good idea.
Fair Food Forager.
Hello again and welcome to this episode of the Fair Food Forager and Friends Show. The podcast brought to you by the Fair Food Forager app, the world's only ethical social media and sustainable food directory. You can jump on there via the App Store or the Play Store. You can search ethical cafes and restaurants and farmers markets. Or you can just post your appreciation of the planet and cool things that you're up to in your crusade to help us live on a bit of a cleaner earth. I'm super excited to bring you today's episode with Holly Rankin, otherwise known as Jack River. I'm sure you've heard some of her songs. She's got so many, and they're just epic. She's really laid back and such a cool person to talk to, but she's not laid back in her attitude for a cleaner planet. She's really looking to help the music industry play a key role in making politicians and people do a little bit better when it comes to looking after our planet. I really enjoyed this chat. I hope you do. So without further ado, here is Holly Rankin. Hello and welcome to the Fair Food Forager and Friends Show. I'm down on the beautiful South Coast with Holly Rankin, who is otherwise known as Jack River.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to speak to me when you probably have other things to be doing, I'm guessing.
I'm working on some things, but no, it's a pleasure to speak and really excited to speak on all the things. I'm sure we will.
Yeah, I guess we'll cover a lot of topics here, but first it would be good to get a little bit of an idea about you and your music career and where that all came from.
Sure. Big life question. I grew up on Worimi Country in Foster, New South Wales, and I guess from a really young age I wrote in my diary from like 5 or 6, and then probably 8 or 9 started playing piano and then guitar in high school. I started to write in my teenage years, and then due to some, you know, hectic things that happened in my family, I lost my sister, and I feel like that huge life event drove me into really needing to express myself and write music and create another world. So, yeah, I was very interested in, like, environmental law probably at that same time and politics and everything that I'm coming back to now. But life just took the path of music and I followed it and hustled and found a team and have made a few EPs and an album and got a team in Australia and the States and started touring, got Triple J support. Yeah, fast forward 8 years and here we are.
Sounds like you took the right path.
Yeah, I think I always looked up to musicians' ability to use their voice in a creative way and speak about things like climate and politics in a digestible and interesting way. And I feel like, yeah, that I'm really happy that I took that path now. It's such an incredible free space to be able to work in. So, yeah, stoked.
I heard about the diaries. How young did you say you were when you started doing this?
Probably like 5 or 6, yeah. But I have kept a pretty consistent diary, not like a dear diary, this is what I did today, but like a diary since, yeah, 12 or 13. So I just, you know, have a lot going on in my head and feel very... I feel the need to, like, express it in words just for my own self to understand and digest the world and figure it all out.
It's pretty incredible to start writing your thoughts down at 5.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what I was thinking then, but it was probably much simpler than thinking about my thoughts.
Yeah, I don't know. I was really attracted to... like noting down experience, like if we went on a family holiday or something, I just wanted to write about it. And yeah, it's definitely like my one very pure like love in my life is just writing in my diary. Yeah.
Wow. And did this help you in dealing with the loss of your sister?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. Like that experience, anyone listening that has been through that would know any kind of loss in your life, like it, especially at a really young age, it absolutely like shifts your whole world view and like everything you knew about the world that was safe. So I needed to, yeah, understand so many things that I was experiencing and thinking, and I didn't have my parents to turn to or anyone around me because they were all engulfed with their own grief. So I think that having my diary, it was like a savior because I had somewhere to go. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. And is it soon after that when you really got into the music?
I think so, I guess. Like songs just started pouring out of my brain and I realized that music was a way to like activate words in a more visual and illustrated way. Yeah, it's just like creating a movie of your poetry kind of thing in sound. Yeah. And I think at that age, like anyone gets into music pretty hardcore at 16, 17 and you want to be some kind of rock star. And I just like took it seriously. Yeah.
Well, you're lucky if you want to be a rock star and you have the skills that you can actually do it as well. That helps.
Yeah. I don't know if I have the skills. But, yeah, I just had the vision and, like, I do enjoy working pretty hard, so I guess I work pretty hard, like, from a very young age and zoned in on it and just did it, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right about having that type of message coming through in music as well. Some artists are obviously better than others, but I remember when I think about it actually, and I don't think I've thought about this until you mentioned that, but where I started thinking about the world outside of just me was probably, like, I've always had an interest in the environment, but thinking about bigger issues probably came from listening to bands like Midnight Oil.
Yeah, or Bob Dylan. Or,
yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Who were your influences on this?
I feel like so many, but, I learned about history through music for sure, and especially the movement in the 60s and 70s, between the civil rights movement and the environmental movement in the States and those movements flowing back through to Australia. Even like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, I feel like they were one of my early influences that made me realize what was going on outside of Foster. And even going into like the Doors and Bob Dylan and seeing the philosophers like Friedrich Nietzsche, I'm not bourgeois enough to have remembered how to say it, and Arthur Rimbaud, and like poets and philosophers that were influencing social movements.
Mm.
I was getting obsessed with that whole train of thought, and it all originates in music. So, yeah, I definitely remember like also seeing Peter Garrett's face on like it was like an Australian version of like The Economist or like it was like a political or some kind of magazine or newspaper at a really young age, maybe 14 or 15, and asking my mum like, how is this musician so involved in politics and thought and stuff, and learning about his treading in both worlds and speaking poetically about what's going on in society and bringing people along with him was just like, that looks like a really fun avenue to have impact instead of the really black and white political or like illegal kind of avenue.
I think we all probably have an inner activist in us, but when someone that you look up to and admire like a musician, I think it definitely activates that more in you. I remember Midnight Oil playing on the back of a truck in New York City and telling people to tear up their Exxon credit cards after the Exxon Valdez oil spill in Alaska. Right. And I just remember thinking that was so cool that they were this – well, I didn't even know how big they were in America. But this band from Australia going over there and telling Americans to tear up their credit cards.
It's awesome.
And I knew nothing about Exxon.
Yeah.
I do now. But, that I think that – really does get people thinking.
Totally. Or even Paul Kelly's song, you know, From Little Things, Big Things. Absolutely. Grow, like, from a young age. And even now, to be honest, like, those notes of our history that aren't drummed into us in through the education system of Vincent Lingari, you know, like, we remember that story because he sung about it, and we remember the importance because he sung about it, but there's no other way.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're an expert or really interested, that you could remember all that detail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. But it's really hard to put, like, the revolution into songwriting. And I feel like I'm only just finding the confidence to blend my passions of, like, writing music and what I do in my life in climate and the environmental movement, because you just can't force songwriting. I'm excited to be doing that now, but it hasn't been reflected in my music, I don't think, up until this point. Only in a few songs. But
so you feel it's starting to creep into your music now?
Yeah, like on my next album it'll be firmly centered. But you can't just come out all guns blazing in the beginning of your career and like expect people to go along for the ride, unless you're Bob Dylan maybe and you can just do it perfectly.
Yeah. So there might be a few little protest songs in your next album.
Yeah, it's majority protest.
That's great.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes, but it's like the times that we're living in have like bubbled to a point where it's like I can't move forward. I can't release another song about my personal emotions. Like, it's not what I'm interested in, and the people I speak to, I feel like, you know, we're over it. We need protest songs and songs to, like, help the shift that's happening.
Well, I guess it's part of being a musician, isn't it? You follow where you're at in your own life as well.
Yeah, you've got to be ready to, like, represent your words and your music. So
how does that process work for you, writing music? Do you start with an idea, say, about climate? Or
it's usually like, it's really hard to force a song, and I've just learnt that over lots of years of trying. It's usually a melody. I think most songwriters would say it's a really catchy melody and might be accompanied with some words in your head. And I just haven't found that even if I'm extremely passionate, I can't, like, force how to write about that topic. It's just like fate, and it'll come. Just let the intention sit in your brain and let it match with a melody. And yeah, it's a magical process. I don't understand it.
So it could just come into your mind while you're doing something.
Yeah.
And you just have to race home and start writing it down, or?
Yeah, you just chuck it in your voice memos.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, like, I know that I want to write a song about X, and I just kind of let that intention simmer in my brain,
mm-hmm.
and wait for like the right idea and melody to come back and pick it up.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it, because you grew up in Foster and then you spent some time in the Big Smoke in Sydney, and you've ended up down here on the South Coast, and it seems like you timed it just in time for the bushfire season last year.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about climate change and writing some of this stuff into your music.
Mm-hmm.
Is this really where the environmental thinking, the climate thinking came about after moving down here, or was that something that you've always thought about? You said you were already interested in kind of those protest songs, so there was obviously some of that.
Yeah, no, that has been probably beyond music, close to my first passion of writing, having an affinity with environmental activism has been there since I was quite a young kid, and in different forms, pre-music of my life, I've been as involved as possible in my local, like in Foster and in Sydney and nationally in environmental activism, like started Youth Against Coal Seam Gas in the Great Lakes up at Foster when I was like maybe 16, and was kind of emailing the local MP in year four about different environmental things. And I started a year of environmental science when I was 20, before getting kind of swung back into music.
Mm.
I've tried law a few times with the idea to get into environmental law. So it's like, just looking for many years at the best way to have impact with my skill set and my brain and talent, whatever, because I know that there are so many avenues you can go down to have impact.
Mm.
And after building one career that took 10 years, I'm very, conscious of time and energy. So I don't know, I've kind of gone down a different path with that question. But, no, it's always been kind of front and centre for me. Mm. It's just finding the place to be able to have the most impact.
Mm.
And I saw that in music and culture. So
mm.
I went and worked on that, and yeah.
Well, I guess you've spent all this time building your platform, and so you have people that are looking up to you or watching you. So is that where you see your greatest impact now?
Yeah, I mean, I will be doing 100% within Jack River and my offerings musically and like to my audience, but I'm also really interested in larger artists and kind of promoter companies in the music industry and basically anyone in the world that I'm in that I have connection to. I'm interested in how we can connect their cultural power and capital to the climate movement and the energy push and even politics, because there's such a chasm between our politicians who are actually, they're going to be the ones legislating and places like the music industry. Like there's, the gap couldn't be wider in terms of connection. So yeah, I'm kind of constantly meeting with different politicians, different people in the music industry, and pretty much like the majority of organisations within climate and renewable energy to look for ways to connect them up. So yeah, I'm doing that kind of separate to Jack River, but it's all a part of the same intention to see, like, how can youth culture, like, assist in this movement, because there's a very mobilised demographic that want the same things as the climate movement and the renewables movement.
Mm.
So how can we all work together to make that happen? So, yeah, I'm working on that.
I guess it's, you know, issues that face young people or face Indigenous people or face the climate. They're all kind of issues of fairness, aren't they? So is that kind of what you're trying to – because you've got, like, the climate school strike and school kids who would probably be aware of your music anyway, and then older, the next kind of generation, like people at university and things who are probably also the age group that are following you.
Yeah.
So you're trying to bring more people together that way, or is it more from an industry, the music industry perspective?
Kind of both. Like, I think like I'm working on a project at the moment that I can't talk about because it's not announced yet, but it's an attempt to support a really positive thing happening in New South Wales politics with climate legislation. How can we plug the best youth culture and voices from music in to help amplify that announcement? So things like that, it's just kind of in music, it's a constantly moving magical space where things change every day. So you've just got to kind of look for opportunities. It might be within Duck River. It might be I see something for another artist, Tones and I or Thelma Plum doing something incredible, knowing I can connect them quickly into a great person at the Climate Council or whatever. So just kind of help being like of service basically and looking at like what's in my camp, like who's not connected. But it's just, you know.
So you're like a conduit linking people on both sides that might be on the same page but aren't linked at all.
Try to be, And I'm trying to do that more often, realising, like, the urgency of it. And I think, like, Triple J, which is our amazing, like, platform that supports us so much, those listeners, their number one concern is climate change. And so I see, like, my role as, like, we're, like, people's politicians. We kind of listen to our audience and they're kind enough to buy our tickets and come to our shows. I care about the same things as them. So, like, what can I do to create them or find the information that they're looking for that's not coming through the news channels it's not kind of looking pretty coming out of research institutions and stuff. So,
Yeah, because there is such a us and them type thing with, especially with climate, isn't there? If you're an environmentalist, there's always we're always banging on about why the politicians aren't doing, you know, what they need to be doing, and they're only kind of looking after a very small section of the population. Yeah. How awesome would it be if we were all just working together and we were all saying, you know, job well done, no matter what party they were from.
That's right. And I just think that the climate goals that the majority of people want is net zero by 2050 emissions or 2030 or, you know, earlier on a federal level. And that, like, fast forward 10 years and all industries, all parties will be on the same page because they'll be forced to. And I think, like, the more amazing people I meet within the renewable energy movement, whether it's like a startup or someone like Future Super, you know, Mike Cannon-Brooks from Atlassian, like there's a new guard coming through and they are bipartisan or apartisan. They recognise that this is like an urgent global situation and that our country is going to be left behind economically if we don't act. So if you're concerned with economics, business, environment, your kid, the tennis not being too hot, like all the concerns will be aligned. And, yeah, it's kind of like it's not us and them. And, I don't really subscribe to that, like, hectic left activist us and them thing because, like, the energy companies who you're saying are the enemy, yes, they might be really bad, but they are the companies that are investing in the change. So we need to just all, like, chat and and just get it done. Like there's time to keep people in line, but like there's enough people working on this to just keep going.
Yeah, I guess I'm guilty of that myself a little bit too. But and then you think, but it's happening anyway. I think that, as you said, a lot of, say, energy companies are investing in renewable energy.
Yeah.
And then, but then there's also the push to, you know, keep things as they are for a little bit longer.
Totally.
And you know, and as you said, if you fast forward 10 years' time, you can see that everything's would have turned around.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wow, but we want it to turn around now.
Yeah.
And you say something like that, which is a you know, I've been guilty of saying something divisional myself.
Yeah.
But then you're like, oh, but it's happening.
Yeah.
And so you don't know which direction to turn sometimes. But
oh, it's so hard to know. So pressure is so important, and accountability, consumer accountability is so important. And that is what's driving this change. Like, yeah, I think there's, especially when it comes to politics, like if we keep subscribing to their us and them thing and the media's us and them thing, like it's so time wasting.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I want to meet with, you know, both Liberal and Labor, and I issue based, like I care about climate. I care about your, you know, environmental policies. So what are you doing in that space? You know, we're not going to just slap a sticker on our car and say we're Labor or Liberal. Yeah, it's just like not about that right now.
You'll vote for whoever is doing the right thing.
Yeah, that's it, which is, democracy 101.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because you're down here in Mollymook, and we talked before we started about the crew at Treading Lightly, and that's a group who are really about, you know, treating the environment with more respect and treating Indigenous culture with more respect. So are you involved with those guys, or are you?
Yeah.
I think you couldn't live here and not know about them.
No, they're Monica Mudge and the team at Treading Lightly are like one of the reasons I'm really happy to be living down here. And the work they do, which, you know, for anyone that doesn't know about them, it's like very active community strengthening, especially when it comes to environmental and First Nations, like local matters. So yeah, they do so much. Like, for instance, recently they had a UN country specific speaker series with Firesticks Alliance. So, you know, like weekly Zooms about Firesticks and their work on UN country and how we can tune into that. So they're bringing these, like, the national movement right down to a local level. Like, they organise our paddle outs for Fight for the Bite, or they support Manana Matters in protecting the piece of land at Manana. And when the bushfires were happening, they were, like, first on the scene. They were organising the local boys to take jet skis out to the locals at Manana who were stranded and give them food and water. Like, it wasn't, no offence to SES or any government orgs, but, you know, they had a community group mobilised, ready to go to plug in when something unforeseen like this happened. So, yeah, they're incredible, and I do my best to support them in what they're doing, and I think it's just, like, the most incredible example of how a local community group can have, like, really significant impact on the community, but also just individuals, like, knowing that I can call Monica Mudge if I don't know what's going on with something with state government that's to do with this country and land we're on. You know, it's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and if she doesn't know, she'll have a contact of someone that does, or possibly does. So
yeah, it's just like a resurgence of potentially a more Indigenous model of local custodians that we trust. They're not in a government position. They're like community chosen, or, you know, backed physician, and they can work on a fluid level with free flowing funding and stuff. So I think it's really powerful, and I hope it's happening everywhere else.
Yeah, I think it's kind of what you were just talking about, you know, with the whole climate movement, but on a local level, it's bringing people together that have different skills and different interests in whatever it is, if it's land management or if it's reducing plastic in the ocean or, you know, helping businesses. It's all it's just bringing people together that have a common kind of a core interest.
Totally. It's so energizing. Like when I think of Monica, I just get a burst of energy because it's nice to be surrounded by people that are working originally likely for free to do what they love and what they need to do to protect the planet and their local area. Like it's just a natural drive that we can all have access to that is beyond paychecks, et cetera. It's really important that we're all financially compensated for our time, but connecting with that natural, you know, will to protect is pretty awesome. And it's Treading Lightly's got it in spades, so
So you've definitely made the right decision moving down here.
Yeah, like it's a big factor. I think it's, you know, for me, being quite interested in politics and community and stuff, looking at our local members, federal and state, our councillor at Shoalhaven, Amanda Finlay, she's a Greens mayor, and it's just kind of unheard of. And, you know, having Fiona Phillips from Labor, who's very passionate about supporting those environmental action groups all along the coast and farmers markets and that new wave is really cool and Treading Lightly. And, yeah, you just don't want to be, you know, my hometown up in Foster. But there's a pretty incredible community down here that are very active in this space. So I feel supported and at home. Yeah,
and it gives you that, I guess, that buzz that you need to, if you're going to move forward on, you know, trying to help us deal with climate change, then you need to be feeling positive that things are happening. You don't want to be feeling like the case is hopeless.
Yeah, you don't, like up on Where Am I Country in Foster, you know, the federal MP is someone like David Gillespie, and with all due respect to him, but he had a lot of fires. I think it's 40% of the land in his electorate was burned, but he doesn't. He's on the Barnaby Joyce side of, you know, saying that the fires have nothing to do with climate. So it's just like, it's just draining thinking, I don't want to live in a place where I'm completely being drained and the leadership's not kind of where we're going. Like hopefully it changes, but if you're working really hard, you need to feel supported and
Yeah, absolutely. Do you ever get in discussions with people that, you know, just don't understand, you know, why you're passionate about this and what, and, you know, just can't see from, you know, the side that you're speaking?
Yeah, definitely. And I really want to make more of an effort to have more discussions with people that aren't on the same page. I think living down here, as much as it's a forward-thinking area, it's an area that, you know, people don't really care as much. I don't know. I don't want to speak for everyone, but you know, people who have just voted for the same party for their whole life or because their parents do or whatever. Yeah, I think that the economic and business case for creating emissions targets is finally kind of coming into the limelight with people like Matt Keane in New South Wales and other more conservative voices in the country. Previous to that, I didn't have the kind of knowledge of the economic and business case and the wave of, like, China and South Korea all moving in the same direction to kind of back that argument. I think people understand climate change is happening, but they say, like, what about the jobs? What about the jobs in coal? Yeah, you know, jobs, and I guess they have this idea of the country's wealth depending on those industries. There's a really cool report out recently for anyone, any nerds, that the Australia Institute released, Climate of the Nation report, and it's a really great look into how Australians perceive the actual economic impact of these industries in our country. So I think they found, it's a wide study over like 5 years, they found that we like overestimate the economic impact of coal by, I think, like 400% or something. Like we, yeah. You know, so this perception is like really well drilled into us that it's such a big thing. But now, yeah, there's a great kind of economic argument coming through.
Yeah, I think quite often it's also just that change. You know, people aren't – there's a change coming, and that's just the fact that there's a change is a little bit scary.
Yeah.
But not actually – and in people's defence, I guess, too, they're probably not bombarded with information about how good it can be.
Yeah, and they don't have time. Like it's – they don't have time. And how often do we look up at the stars and think about our existence? Like we're concerned with our – families and our jobs and our income, and like that's so right, like that's how it should be. We don't see the effect that's coming, or like we're not hearing the science every day. And I'm in a position where I get to direct my time, so I do direct a lot of it toward figuring things out, learning. But yeah, the bushfires, it's a clear example to people of like the kind of climate that we're looking at moving forward.
I agree. I'm kind of in this, so I'm reading a lot about it and thinking about it a lot. And if I ever encounter someone that's just like, oh, you know, like as you said, it's not happening, or it's got nothing to do with climate change, I always sort of bring it back to, you know, but don't you love to go into the bush, or you know, you play in the ocean, and what harm do we have in it's just say all the science was wrong and everyone was wrong.
Yeah.
What harm is there in having a clean planet and
yeah.
a clean ocean and protected natural environments?
Yeah.
You know, where all these things are in balance and we're, you know, we're not sending species extinct. Is that bad?
Yeah.
And you know, I think there is more and more information coming out about the amount of jobs and the amount of prosperity and things that actually also come along with renewable energy.
Yeah, I know. Well, if the country doesn't take that step federally, we are really going to be left behind the next economic wave in the world. You know, if China's beating you on your targets, like China, incredible, I don't want it to sound we perceive them in some way, but I think that's like the manufacturing capital of the world. If they're moving in that direction consciously, then you need to kind of dial in and take a look. But yeah, I think the more I understand my concern for climate, it's not I'm a nature lover, like from the bottom of my soul, but I think that it's not really about even the environment, our human concern. It's literally for our kids and our future generation, their living condition and their economy. We're not very selfless beings. I don't think everyone can connect to the love for nature. You know, it's really like a human thing. It's a love for like life and human life, which is gross, but that's probably what will save us when people actually understand that it's about their kids and their living conditions and the world that they might be living in if no action's taken.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, everything that I guess people are doing, if you're working and trying to buy a house and trying to live in a good area and bring up children, that's all because you're trying to give them a good future.
Yeah.
So it's exactly the same in a way, isn't it? It's just not the house that you're looking after and within your fence. It's everything. When they leave that fence, are you going to give them something that's safe and enjoyable?
Yeah, are they going to be able to travel to, you know, islands? You know, are they, what kind of wars might arise from like a lack of clean water, or like what kind of fish stocks might not be there if the oceans are acidic in, you know, 20 to 50 years or they're overfished. It's just quite real. And I think that, even just thinking of myself as a mum, I can't really move forward without knowing that I'm doing everything I can to kind of make that future better already.
Yeah. Mm. Mm. Wow, that's huge. We're getting pretty deep.
Yeah, but I think it's good. The conversation needs to move beyond. I mean, for me, I don't see, like, when I'm talking to my mechanic uncle in Cronulla, who's just like, you're a tree hugger, saying, you know, don't you love bushwalk?
Yeah.
It just doesn't click with him. But, you know, you're going to save X amount on your house if you chuck solar on the roof over a year. Then he's like, oh, okay.
Mm.
Simple. Yeah.
Because I saw earlier in the week you said you congratulated Zali Steggall for the Climate Act Now on climate, and Fair Food Forager was one of the companies that signed up to that. I think there were 107 awesome. Companies. And the fact that some of those companies are pretty huge as well is a pretty good indication that business thinks that this is the way to go.
Definitely.
And hopefully that is something, because there were a lot of B Corps on there.
Yeah.
And B Corps are signing up to this thing because they know that's part of what they do is to give back rather than just be focused purely on profit.
Yeah.
So hopefully that type of dialogue and seeing that big companies are signing up to this stuff.
Definitely.
I think we saw something the other day that Woolies.
Bunnings, yeah. Woolworths announced today that they're going renewable energy by, have to check the facts, but it might be 2050, but it could be 2030.
I think it was sooner.
Yeah, and Bunnings announced that too just this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, China, South Korea and Japan announced their legislating emissions targets net zero by 2050 or 2060 in China. But, like, it's
they've got to move 1.3 billion people. We've only got to move 26 million.
Yeah, I know. Mm. We need that propaganda machine.
Yeah, look at that. You know, and look at Australia, how well-placed we are for this.
Yeah.
For renewable energy. And we could be probably exporting excess energy that we're getting for free from the sun.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mike Cannon-Brooks is building a cable up to Singapore, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I need to know more about it, but he's building, like, a cable to send across renewable energy up to Singapore.
Well, I'm not an engineer or electrical engineer,
yeah,
or solar engineer, whatever they are. But I spoke to an engineer a few years ago, and that's what they were saying, that Australia, they'd already done modelling that Australia could produce more than it needs.
Yeah.
And I remember 10 years ago I was talking to Zali about this when Tony Abbott was getting in, you know, that we were going to struggle to reach 10% in Australia. And, you know, I think most people knew that was rubbish back then, but if we can reach more than 100% and then we've got half the world's population
totally
right next to us.
Yeah, well, like, states like Tasmania are running on 100% renewables almost, I think, and the ACT, and every state except for New South Wales has net zero by 2050 legislated.
Mm.
So that's also a story that we don't hear a lot about. We're all focused on ScoMo and what he's doing wrong, which is valid, but yeah, like, there's a real obvious movement going on. It's not crazy to think that everything is going to be going in the right direction.
Yeah,
it's just a bit of a rush to get there. We need to rush, basically. Yeah
And I think there is a bit of a flood. I feel like there's a bit of a flood of good news at the moment as well. As you said, a lot of those countries have announced these changes.
Yeah.
Because the what happened with the US election, you know, I don't know whether whoever gets in over there is absolutely perfect, but the fact that they're looking at climate change policy means that Australia potentially will look a little bit sad if it's not. Like, if we're standing alone on this, so we're more likely to follow the US if they do something.
Yeah, definitely.
Over there. And I think New South Wales actually did say that they were going to invest more in renewable energy. Again, I don't know the facts.
Yeah.
But
oh, no, yeah, there's been really great announcements coming from Matt Keane, who's the Energy and Environment Minister in New South Wales. His plan is to make New South Wales literally a renewable energy superpower. Yeah, so yeah. They're setting up.
Oh, that's right. They're competing with Queensland because Queensland Premier announced something, so New South Wales was going to be better.
Yeah.
Something like that.
But yeah, he's, you know, they're working on a real bipartisan level, Liberal and Labor in New South Wales to achieve these goals. And meeting with Minister Keane, you can see that he has a lot of drive and passion to make this happen. I have met many people who are as driven as him. So that's really exciting to meet politicians who are so acutely aware of what needs to be done and they have the kind of energy to navigate their field, which seems sticky.
Yeah. So great.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is lots of good things happening. And I think, you know, people like yourself, you know, hopefully bringing lots of people along with you on that ride. And then we've got the kids who are all going to be voting in the next 6 to 10 years.
Yeah.
And what they're going to be voting for change on climate.
Absolutely.
You can guarantee that.
Yeah. And I think that, we'll see great leaders come through politics when they know that vote is coming through. It's just right now we're dealing with, still a generation that are kind of maybe a little bit brainwashed. So that great, I don't know if everyone listening probably saw it, but Malcolm Turnbull taking down the editor of The Australian. Did you see that?
I didn't see.
it's just incredible. He's on Q&A, sorry.
Yep.
It is the best. It'll make you feel so good.
Are they both on there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's just literally really tearing down the Murdoch media's propaganda on climate. Yeah.
And maybe I should put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, you should. It's just like a little feel-good video. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's also Kevin Rudd's petition that I think it was tabled in Parliament with 500,000 signatures, the biggest ever e-petition that's been presented in Parliament.
That's awesome.
To reduce the Murdoch media's control of Australia's media.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such an important story to normalise. Our discussion about what we're reading a few years ago, you would have felt like you were an outsider talking about that in the public sphere, like me as an artist. But it's really awesome to know that, you know, people are talking about it. And
I think years ago, I probably wasn't reading the newspaper, but say 20 or 30 years ago, people were probably more able to form their own opinions because they were seeing different versions of the news because it was all, TV news and newspapers. And so they could see kind of polarized or maybe a bit more balanced media in general, and then they could work out what their thinking was going to be on any topic. Whereas now it's like if you are reading most of our newspapers or even just bumping in a cafe and seeing the cover, you can see why just those little messages, and they're not even always that direct, just start to
create
that opinion over time.
Totally. Slash if, you know, majority of people are on Facebook and being kind of, cornered by their own algorithm, basically.
Yeah. And Facebook feeding you more of what they think you want to see, which is what the social dilemma was all about.
Yeah, so clever. That? Yeah, I have. Mm. It's very hectic.
Yeah. And I don't think that was done to cause any issue, but it was definitely caused to make money, but that's the outcome of it.
Yeah, I think that those companies, Facebook in particular, have such a responsibility.
Mm.
Like they've made enough profit.
Mm.
They need to, obviously, it's pretty, I don't even need to say it, but, you know, as someone in culture and a young person, I don't want that in my future.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people agree. Like we want to think for ourselves and it's sad to know that Zuckerberg kind of originally felt like a bit of a thought leader and now it's turned out that feels quite backward and it's just the old guard. So, excited to see the new social networks that emerge in the next few years.
Like Fair Food Forager.
Yeah, like Fair Food Forager. You're the new Zuckerberg.
No. So, all right, well, Let's like take it down a little bit then, yeah, and just talk about you a little bit more.
Yeah.
So you're down here in this beautiful environment. You mostly work from home. Yeah. And how do you stay positive?
Positive? I like have a pretty, thanks to COVID, grounded lifestyle. Like I've got an awesome dog and I swim every day and surf with my partner and have a great community here. And there's no shortage of everyday positivity in my life, which is really nice. And then I stay really connected to a lot of great people in the climate movement and in music, but this year's been super distant for music. But, yeah, I just keep surrounded with really great people and constantly kind of, yeah, checking my worldview. And it's been a very strange year, of course, for everyone. And I think with Trump, you know, that's like fed into our daily mood of definitely me, how I was thinking, you know, what is my life going to look like if this keeps happening? But it's really exciting to have, yeah, a movement, I think, a shift away from that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the kind of overload of news hasn't been great this year. It's like a lot. But I just really care about stuff, so.
Do you think that's because you've had more time to actually pay attention to it? Because your life would have changed pretty quickly.
Yeah, this year.
With COVID.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for the past few years I've been pretty glued to not the news, but like I read a lot. This year for anyone in events, creative, tourism, you know, the airlines and stuff, like we really have been dropped into infinity.
Yeah.
So I started studying as well to just need to focus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Need something to work on, don't like doing nothing. So.
Yeah, because you would have been, look, because musicians are probably one of the hardest hit from what's happened.
Yeah.
And so you would have been all over the place.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're
just home. In the one spot. Yeah. Which, you know, for me, for some people, they really love touring, but I was really not, I don't love being on the road all the time. And I never really have, so I really appreciated the gift of having to stay put.
Yep.
And it'll create a lot of change moving forward. I'm not going to go back to flying weekly. And yeah, and we've been, like, absolutely saved by JobKeeper. Like, that's saved us. My business, it's picking up now with a few different shows, but, like, the Jack River business is down, like, 97%. So
really?
Yeah. Because we make our income from touring. So, JobKeeper's saved us and we're very thankful to ScoMo. But, yeah, I don't know. I stay pretty positive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're still doing okay. Have you in touch with many musicians who have had a harder time of this?
I think, like, to be honest, like, JobKeeper is really integral. Everyone's still on that benefit, so if it goes away there will be a lot of heartbreak, but it's holding our livelihoods together.
Yeah.
So I don't think too many people have crashed. Like, we're all in this together and we're thankful to just like, I'm just thankful to get food and like live at home. I think if you look over to the States or the UK, like, we just can't complain. And we're used to, like, doing it pretty tough and, like, living out of a suitcase. And so I don't think musicians ask for much. Yeah, to their credit and detriment sometimes. But I think we're okay at the moment. Yeah.
You had good training in driving around in a car and playing small venues and not earning a lot of money back in the early days?
Definitely, yeah. But lots of training. Yeah.
And it's amazing how much you can live on, or how well you can live on not much. And again, speaking from Australia is maybe, you know, that's not a very broad view, but
yeah,
it is, it is very easy here, I think.
Yeah.
Depending on, you know, your circumstances.
But, totally. And it's just what you want and where you're at in life and what you need, and that changes so much, in a music career. But music definitely humbles you economically. And you got to constantly look at, why am I doing this? What do I want out of it? What am I giving and receiving? And am I okay with that? Because you compromise a lot of time and family and friends and normal things that people take for granted, like being at home for more than 2 weeks in 3 years, you know. Like last year I wasn't home for more than 2 weeks once.
And you said that will... that will change a little bit when you can go back to touring, that this experience will change how you do that?
Is that definitely.
From an environmental thing, or because you just want to be at home more?
Environmentally, like, it just, I kind of was already making that decision maybe last year, looking at whether I wanted to go and attack the States, which is a lot of travel. I just, changed my whole career view to say I don't really wanted to tour the world as my job. So that was a big shift. But just like general happiness, like, I think my partner and that, you know, my family are like, you've never been happier. Just being home. And that might sound boring, but people can't really comprehend the amount of travel you do. It's pretty insane. And you just play a show, you'll fly somewhere, even this is just in Australia, but fly somewhere, play the show, get back home at like 1 or 2 a.m., get up at maybe, 6, catch another flight. You know, if you live regionally, you drive home. So it's just like there's a show, but there's so much travel around it that is just, it's a lot for your body and your mind, yeah.
What about partying? Do you include partying in that, or you're not much of a partier?
I'm not much of a partier, no. Yeah, I never really have been. And now I just, I hardly drink, and luckily I've aligned the people in my crew and my band, they're all like the healthiest people I know, like their outfit. 5 in the gym, or like taking their, you know, protein shake at the airport, or like, I think it's, you can go either way in the music industry, but I've aligned my team to be on the same page.
It would be so exhausting. I've done a few weekends with Ash.
Yep.
And there's no drinking or anything, but I'm exhausted after it too. And I don't know if it's because it's a break in my routine, because I like to go to the beach first thing in the morning and have a swim and a run and stuff.
Yeah.
But just like you say, getting home at, 1 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the morning, and then getting up reasonably early to go to the next place. It's just really, really tiring.
Yeah. And on top of that, you're like absorbing the energy of a crowd and figuring out like what on earth you're doing singing in front of 5,000 people. Yeah, and the emotion internally, and then you got to like, you come back. For me, it's coming back to Molly Mook and not feeling like I can fully relate to people who are really grounded in there, going to the gym, looking after their kids. Let's just have a chill coffee. It's a hard transition, so that has to be managed mentally as well, just creating transition time. Because you go from like quite a hectic world where it's full entertainment and buzz back into a small town.
And it's not something where you can be just tired, go up on stage and kind of be half there and little bit out of it.
Unless you like Angus Stone or something.
And play more chilled songs.
Yeah. No, that's definitely like a consideration now when I'm writing music. I'm like, can I rap this?
Yeah. And so will we see more songwriting and maybe just festival appearances and things from Jack River?
I'll definitely still be touring. It's just...
you'll choose a bit.
Yeah, just manage my life a little bit better. Yeah, because we were just working so hard to get to where I got to. And, now it's like to sustain that, be creative when you need to be, you need to have energy. So, yeah.
And do you record here, or do you go to Sydney or somewhere to do your recording?
Yeah, I have like a little basic studio in the house and record like all the basic stuff, basic ideas, and then I usually work in Sydney with a friend. It's still just his home bedroom kind of studio. Yeah, but
gets results.
Yeah, and we send tracks over to a great mastering engineer in LA, and you know, it's that's another great thing about this year. It's opened the borders digitally. Yeah, so we're working with people around the world, which is cool. From Molly Mook.
Yeah, from little Molly Mook to LA.
Yeah.
And so you said also too that you surf and go to the beach every day and take your dog down there and things. What other sort of healthy practices do you have? Do you eat lots of, are you a like, carnivore or?
I'm like 90% veggie. I was full veggie for about, 12 years that got really tired, really low iron. So, yeah, we try to eat pretty much 90% vegetarian or pescatarian, and when I buy meat, we buy it locally, or we buy fish locally that's caught locally, and we get a weekly veggie box, and that's all awesomely organic. So, yeah, try to, like, gather as much good food as possible. And that's very easy living down here. Yeah, and I guess if I don't know where meat comes from, I don't eat it. So yeah. That's my vote for the...
Yeah, I like that.
And it.
Will we see a vegetable garden or anything?
We just moved in here, so it's there's not much of a veggie garden. But, yeah, we're so excited to build something long-term and have a great kind of working garden of some form. And we're just in transit now. And that's another thing when you're a touring musician, you can't have a garden unless your partner's at home.
Yeah,
being you've got like stay at home gardener. You can't have a garden and have, you know, a connection with like a Treading Lightly group, you know, just random things like a sports team. You are constantly away. So that's another important thing for me, is finding rhythms like a garden or whatever it is, and just really being protective of them.
So you're kind of building all these practices that you're finding now into where you're going to go once you can start touring again.
Yeah.
And how you're going to keep that balance.
Totally. Yeah. And it's like any touring musician will say, it's you don't realize how much playing in a sports team can mean to you when you don't have anything like that in your life, like constantly away, or even just great good friends. You need to be there for them on a regular basis. You need to go to their birthday party. You know, like I did 4 years maybe of like missing everything.
Yeah.
So you just feel like you're a bad person, but you're like pouring so much energy into your career and this weird offering to crowds. But it's fun.
All right, well, I guess maybe we'll just finish off on, you know, you saying, is there anything that you would like to tell people now about anything, about, you know, the COVID situation at the moment, about our planet and how to look after it, or, you know, just a bit of juicy advice.
Awesome advice.
Well, it doesn't have to be advice.
I'm sure you've got a lot of incredible listeners that are growing at home and or that are, you know, small scale and fair farmers and ethical farmers. And I just really appreciate, you know, that there's so many communities and families out there who are doing that and making that shift. So, and I can't wait to like meet more you know, people doing that, and I feel like I can speak on behalf of my industry that we want to be supportive, and that means things like helping major musicians when they come to Melbourne or Ballarat, wherever, like how can we connect to your what you're doing in farming or growing, whatever. We're at the ready to create more channels to use our platform, get it on the rider and talk about it. And, yeah, so.
Yeah, I loved let's quickly just talk about your podcast, because I was listening to one of your podcasts today where you were talking about, you know, how musicians when they're touring can can reduce their impact as well. And I love that you mentioned Jack Johnson.
Yeah.
And how he has the refill stations and there's no plastic, and then there's also an education element. So, yeah, is that – your podcast, I know it covers some pretty different topics.
Yeah.
But do you want to talk a little bit about that just quickly?
Oh, yeah, my podcast. So
– Rebel in the Times.
To Rebel in the Times, yeah. I started that just because I love having conversations with musicians about shit they care about and – I feel like we don't get to hear it always. Like, we're always focused on music. And as people could probably tell in this interview, you know, I care about so much more than just my music. And I think that's interesting. Like, I want to hear that from other people. So, yeah, the podcast will be continuing. We're just kind of zoning in on where I want to take it and how far and wide we can go with our conversations. But, yeah, it'll be coming back soon. Yeah.
Well, I binged the whole thing pretty much. I listened to two this morning when I was running on the beach, and then I listened to
thanks for listening.
Three or so in the car on the way down, and then I finished off with some of your music. So
thank you.
I was
had
getting
a full
in the
morning.
Mood.
Yeah, no. Well, thank you for listening. As you would know, just starting something, you don't know where it's going to end, and going out having kind of different conversations is interesting. Yeah.
As we said when I got here, that, you know, with a podcast, I guess there is no rules. You just start talking and see what happens.
Yeah, totally.
But yours seem quite well. You've probably done more research. You do know a little bit of background about the people you're speaking to.
Yeah. I guess those first six episodes, I was pretty like obsessed already with
the people,
what they're all doing.
Yeah.
And I think I did work with an amazing producer to help me refine the obsession. Yeah, moving forward, I think we're really going to zone in on how people have kind of built something, like how that really interesting process of finding your voice and then using it. How does that happen? Like, how did Zali Steggall kind of, where were those pieces clicking for her to do that? Because I think that's so interesting and empowering to hear and be inspired by someone and like just tip you over the edge to go in that like progressive direction, whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I love that thinking. How does someone have that? Because I guess we've all got thoughts, but what is it that pushes somebody to do that little bit more?
Yeah.
And actually start a business or bring it into their music or start educating people and speaking about something.
Yeah.
There's something where they either just go, well, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go for it and I don't care what the reaction is, or they already have the confidence to just get out there and speak what they want.
Totally. Mm. And that like expansive mindset, tapping into that. How far can we take this movement? How quickly can we go? You know, what is my personal glass roof? Getting past those things can change your whole entire world, and it can change everything if you can just break out of that. So yeah, it's cool. And I'm always trying to break wider with my own, so I like listening. Yeah.
Yeah. You're learning as much as your listeners are.
Oh, absolutely. So
all right.
I feel like I've talked so much random shit.
That's what this is all about. Yeah. I feel bad because I feel like we haven't spoken enough about music, but
oh well, that's kind of my life at the moment. It's
just everything.
Yeah, it's a bit of everything, but I'm trying to write an album about the times that we're living in, and I don't need the music comes naturally. Music's always going to be there. It's been there forever in our psyche and stuff. So I'm like trying to feed my album with information about the times, and if that makes sense. People like probably think I'm smoking weed, but it's, you know, I'm more interested in the world and what's going on, and know that that will come into my music.
I might be way off topic here, but I feel like your music at the moment is kind of like a garden, and all this information that you're absorbing from people and the environment and groups like Treading Lightly, and that is like your organic matter that you're feeding your garden. which is then going to grow this music that's going to be your next album.
That's so cool. I love that. That's exactly what it is. Do you know what? I don't talk about it often, but I think of music, if I think of my life, there's a house and there's like an office and books and stuff.
Mm.
And then my music is like my garden in the backyard. It's where I go to play and let things flow and happen and like interact with nature, but it's not my everything. Mm. I'm really interested in other things, and music's like my diary that I like to keep like that because it's special. I don't want it to be extremely serious and pressured, and it's fun to.
It's just a natural part of who you are, and it just comes out when it's ready.
Yeah. Mm. And I think like the more I understand about the artists I look up to, that's their approach, and I don't resonate with, I love Nick Cave's approach, but for me that's not my approach, to sit down and write music 9 to 5. Actually, maybe he writes, so I could totally do that. Mm. But music isn't, it's a product of my life. It's not my life.
I heard a good quote from Seth Godin. Do you know Seth Godin?
I love Seth Godin.
Where he says that the key to writing is to write badly.
Yeah.
And so I guess it's just that practice thing, isn't it? So if you write for hours, 90% of it might be rubbish, but there's going to be that little bit of gold.
Totally.
Mm.
Even just having the confidence to be bold with, like, telling people how you see something, it comes with practice. And I really love that skill that's come through music and producing music and writing, like feeling quite confident with my opinion. Mm. It's really empowering to take that into climate or something.
Mm.
Like you just feel a confidence with your own, not opinion, but just, maybe it is opinion.
So. I guess you're in a position now where you've done sort of the hard yards and you're not an emerging artist or a very starting, you're in the beginning where you're sort of fearful of if your opinion is going to hurt your career.
Yeah.
Now you're in a position where you can mix the both.
Totally.
Mm.
Yeah. And I guess any, artist, if you've like made an album and managed to show people crazy inner workings of your mind and give it a sheen and a colour and stuff and like hand it over to someone, you've done something great. It's like it's a very crazy thing going into your mind and like trying to reproduce it and show someone what you're thinking, like it's weird. So
And that's kind of being a bit vulnerable, isn't it? Because you're putting it all vulnerable out there, and then people can just go, nah, don't like it or whatever.
Yeah.
And you've got to take the good with the bad, being a public figure like you are.
Yeah. And just internally, like that process with my team at the moment, I'm making an album and I've sent things to my label that I put heaps of effort into that they didn't really care about, no offense to them. But like it's that experience that I love, going through, because it makes you come back to yourself and think, why am I doing this? What am I doing? And I'm happy with that, so I don't really care what they think. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. they're fun skills to acquire, to take wherever to take them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Onward and upward.
Onward, yeah.
All right, cool. I won't take any more of your time. Again, thanks for doing this, and I think there's some gold in what you've said for people.
Thank you so much. No, thanks for doing your podcast and creating your app. It's so needed and awesome.
Oh, hopefully we'll see you on there soon.
Oh, yeah.
we'll talk about
totally.
That.
I'll sort a farm out in a few years. Yeah.
I'll give you a crash course in the app too.
Okay, cool.
All right. Thank you. Awesome. Thanks, Holly. And
thanks so
look for Jack River everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Instagram, Spotify, whatever, Facebook.
You're on Instagram lots of different times, aren't you? You've got different groups and...
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's something we didn't talk about is I started a festival up in Foster that is a local produce and music festival. Our whole goal there was to bring local...
How did we not talk about this?
I don't know. It's all in the preparation for. I mean, it's dead at the moment. Hopefully she comes back next year, but festivals are switched off at the moment. But yeah, I mean, that was created to join together like the music and art movement with the amazing local producers and create content about what they're doing.
And what's it called?
Grow Your Own. Mm. Yeah. So
there you go.
Yeah, it's 4 years old now. Yeah,
we local totally artists didn't talk mixed about that. With external artists.
Yeah, like,
and local food.
Yeah. So we have a growers lineup as well as a music lineup, and we've had that since the beginning. So 4 years.
It's
so cool.
Mm.
Yeah. We love it, and I love, like, we've brought like Heidi from Cloud Control to like a goat's cheese farm in the back of Seal Rocks and stuff, and have a conversation with an artist and a grower, and yeah, they're usually quite similar, creative, passionate people. So yeah.
Will we see when festivals are back on? Is there a chance that there might be a sister version down here on the South Coast?
Yeah, that would be part of the long term vision for sure. Festivals just need support from the government. If you're writing any letters, just throw that in. You know, they're a very selfless kind of business, and they can't survive through this because they're not going to be insured against COVID-related things. And, but festivals are like where everything great comes from.
yeah, and everyone loves a good festival.
Yeah, so I hope it comes back. I think our community up there really love it, and it's brought, you know, a lot of connection. So
Yeah, let's hope so.
Yeah, cool. Mm. I totally forgot that I even did that.
Mm. Good. Thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Holly. And,
Cool. Thanks, enjoy everyone. A girl like her, she is bolder than you think. Can you love a girl like me? Well, she is running through your dreams, drags through the midnight and it reignites. She's walking to you, she's dying to be by your side. She's walking to
the honey pot, you lick your fingers, it's just the rules of this game. There's gotta be a better way. We're running out of time. What the hell waiting for?
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Fair Food Forager and Friends Show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Now please rate and review this podcast and share it with your friends. And also, while you're there, download the Fair Food Forager app. It's in the Play Store and the App Store, and we'll see you over there. Thanks again to Ash Groomwood for his song Out of Time from the album Trouble's Door. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. From a friend.
might have